This is Reading the Classics on KRBD Ketchikan. This evening, Amy Tupfer will be reading from Hans Christian Andersen.
The Snow Queen by Hans Christian Andersen. Prologue. One day, the devil was in high spirits, for he had created a mirror that made everything good and beautiful reflected in it shrink to almost nothing, and everything bad and ugly stand out more clearly than ever. All the little imps who went to the devil's school ran around with the mirror until at last there was nowhere and no one that had not been distorted in it. The devil was much amused, and the mirror itself grinned wickedly. Then the little imps decided to fly up to heaven to make fun of God and his angels. The higher they carried the mirror, the more they grinned, until at last they were shaking so hard with laughter that it slipped out of their hands and fell to the earth, where it broke into millions and millions of pieces. And then it caused even more trouble than before, because all the tiny splinters, scarcely the size of a grain of sand, went flying around the world. And whenever a splinter flew into anyone's eyes, it had the same power as the whole mirror and made people see everything distorted. Sometimes a splinter of glass even entered someone's heart, which was the worst of all, for then that person's heart was turned to ice, as we will now hear. The Snow Queen. Once upon a time, two children lived in an old city. They were not brother and sister, but they loved each other as if they were. The boy was called Kay, and the girl's name was Gerda. They lived in two attic rooms opposite each other. In summer, they could climb over the rooftops to play together. There were roses growing in the window boxes, and the two children often sang a song which went, "In the vale grow wild roses, where we meet the holy child." One winter day, when the windows were frozen over, the children were playing in the snow outside. "Ouch!" cried Kay. "Something has pricked my heart, and something flew into my eye." But when Gerda looked, she couldn't see anything. "I think it's gone now," said Kay. But it hadn't gone. A splinter of the devil's mirror had flown into his heart. "Why are you crying?" he asked Gerda roughly. "It makes you look so ugly." And then he ran away. As Kay ran down the street, a big white sleigh came driving along. It carried someone wrapped in white furs and was drawn by white horses. Kay tied his little sleigh to the big one and rode along too. Soon, both sleighs were going out the city gates. The snow was falling fast, and Kay wanted to untie his sleigh, but he couldn't. The horses ran, fast as the wind, and snowflakes grew larger and larger. Then the white sleigh stopped, and the driver rose. She was covered with snow, and now Kay recognized her. She was the Snow Queen. "You're freezing," the Snow Queen said, and she wrapped Kay in her fur coat and lifted him into the sleigh with her. Then she kissed him on the forehead. That kiss was colder than ice and went straight to his heart. For a moment, Kay thought he was dying, but then he felt better. He forgot all about Gerda and his parents, and he no longer felt cold. Soon they were flying through the air, high among the clouds, over the woods and lakes, over the land and sea, while the cold wind blew and the wolves howled below them. When Kay did not come home that evening or the next, Gerda was in despair. She searched the whole city, but nobody had seen Kay. Gerda wept bitterly. It was a long, sad winter for her. But when spring came, Gerda put on her new red shoes to go to the river and look for Kay. "Did you take my friend away?" she asked the river. "I will give you my new red shoes, my greatest treasure, if you will give him back to me," she said. She got into the boat lying by the bank and threw her shoes into the water. The river did not reply. However, the boat was not tied up, and it moved slowly away from the bank. Seeing this, Gerda wanted to jump out, but it was too late. The boat drifted away on the current, going faster and faster. Gerda was frightened, and she began to cry. Perhaps the river is taking me to Kay, she thought after a while, and she stopped crying. The boat drifted to the bank, where Gerda saw a thatched house standing in a cherry orchard. She called out, and an old woman came out of the house. The old woman drew the boat to the bank with a shepherd's crook and smiled at Gerda. Poor child, why are you drifting down the great river? Asked the old woman. She helped Gerda out of the boat, and Gerda shared her sad story. The old woman said Kay should not yet pass this way, but he might do so any day. She took Gerda's hand, led her into the little house, and gave her delicious cherries to eat. As Gerda ate the cherries, the old woman combed her hair with a golden comb, and gradually the little girl forgot her lost playmate. This old woman was an enchantress, but not a wicked one. She only worked a little magic for her own pleasure. She wanted to keep little Gerda with her because she was lonely. So she hurried out into the garden and touched the beautiful roses with her magic crook, and they sank into the earth. She did not want them to remind Gerda of her home with the roses growing in the window box, for that would remind her of Kay, and then she would go away. The old woman took Gerda into the flower garden. How beautiful, how fragrant it was. It had every flower you could imagine. Gerda played in the flower garden for days. She knew every flower in it, even though there were so many, she thought one flower was missing, though she did not know which. Then, one day, she saw a rose on the old woman's sun hat, a rose the enchantress had forgotten. Gerda ran into the garden. Kay! Kay! I was going to look for Kay! She cried as she began to weep. As her tears fell on the ground, the roses grew again. Roses, do you know where Kay is? Do you think he is dead? Gerda asked them. We have been down underground, for your Kay wasn't there, said the roses. He is not dead. How happy Gerda was! She ran straight out of the old enchantress's flower garden and into the wild world to look for Kay. As Gerda left the kind old enchantress's garden, she left summer behind her too. In the forest, the leaves on the trees were golden. Oh, I have wasted so much time, sighed Gerda. And she ran on and on until her feet were tired and sore and she had to rest. Suddenly, a crow came hopping up to her. Caw, caw, called the crow flying ahead. Thinking the bird would lead her to Kay, Gerda followed it. They came to an avenue where the leaves were falling one after another. A castle stood at the end of it. Caw, caw, called the crow again, and it disappeared into the castle. As Gerda followed, her heart beat quickly. They went through many magnificent rooms until they reached a bedchamber with two golden beds in it. A princess lay in one and a prince lay in the other. But there was no little Kay. Gerda was sad, but the princess was very kind and asked Gerda to share her story. We will help you as much as we can, the prince and princess told her. And they dressed Gerda in silk and velvet and gave her warm fur boots and a muff for her journey. Outside the castle gates stood a coach of pure gold, driven by a fine coachman. The princess helped Gerda into the coach and wished her luck, and off she went again in search of Kay. Gerda rode through a dark forest where the golden coach glowed like a torch. Some robbers saw it and rushed over to it. Gold, they cried, pure gold, and they seized the horse's reins, took the coachman prisoner, and pulled little Gerda out of the coach. Suddenly, a little robber girl appeared. I want to play with that girl, she cried. I want her to give me her muff and her clothes and sleep in my bed with me. I want to ride in that coach. And the robber girl pushed Gerda into the coach, tore her muff out of her hands and told her to take off her boots. Then they drove on further into the forest. Are you a princess? Asked the little robber girl. No, said Gerda. and she told the little rubber girl her story and how much she loved Kay. The coach stopped in the yard of the robber's castle, which was half in ruins, with ravens and crows flying out of the holes in the wall. "You shall sleep with me tonight," said the little robber girl. And as she took a long knife out of a crack in the wall, she laughed. "What is the knife for?" asked Gerda, frightened. "I always sleep with the knife beside me," said the little robber girl. "You never know what may happen." And she went to sleep with one arm around Gerda's neck and the knife in the other hand. But Gerda could not sleep. Then the doves began to coo. "Coo, coo, coo. We have seen Kay. He was in the Snow Queen's sleigh, riding away above the rooftops. Coo, coo, asks the reindeer. He knows the Snow Queen's realm." Gerda looked out the window and saw a reindeer peering in. "Yes, my home is far in the north," said the reindeer, "where we run free in the great valleys, even further north than the Snow Queen pitches her summer tent." "You have seen Kay? He is with the Snow Queen? Then he is still alive. Okay, I will go north and look for you," whispered Gerda, and she went to sleep at last with new hope in her heart. Early in the morning, Gerda told the robber girl all the doves had said, and the robber girl decided to let Gerda go and take the reindeer with her. "And here are your fur boots," said the little robber girl, "because it will be cold, but I will keep the muff. It's too pretty for me to give away. However, I don't want you to freeze. So here is my mother's big mittens and two loaves and a ham so you won't go hungry." The robber girl led the reindeer out of the castle. She put Gerda on the animal's back, saying, "Off you go. Take good care of the little girl." Then the reindeer galloped away into the forest with Gerda. Gerda waved her hand in a big mitten and heard the robber girl call, "Goodbye." Then they raced away over stumps and stones, over swamps and plains, and through great forests as fast as the reindeer could go. The reindeer ran on with Gerda day and night. She ate the loaves and she ate the ham. At last, they came to Finland. The reindeer took Gerda to an old Finnish woman who knew all the secrets of the far north. They went into her cottage, which was so hot that Gerda had to take off her fur boots and her thick mittens. The woman put a piece of ice on the reindeer's head, and then the reindeer told her Gerda's story. "I know how wise you are," said the reindeer. "Can't you give this little girl a potion that will make her strong enough to overcome the Snow Queen?" The Finnish woman took the reindeer into the corner and whispered to him, "Kate is very happy with the Snow Queen. He is under her spell and has forgotten his parents and little Gerda." "But couldn't you let little Gerda have something to give her power against the Snow Queen's magic?" asked the reindeer. "I can give her no more power than she already has," said the Finnish woman. "Don't you see how powerful she is? Even the wild robber girl granted her wishes. Her power lies in her loving heart. But listen, the Snow Queen's realm begins 2 miles from here. Take the little girl to the big bush where the red berry with the red berries, and then hurry back before it gets too cold for you." After saying this, the Finnish woman put Gerda on the reindeer's back, and off they ran as fast as he could go.
"Oh, I have left my boots behind, and my mittens too," cried Gerda as the cold stabbed her like a knife. But the reindeer dared not turn back. On and on he ran. When they reached the bush with the red berries, Gerda climbed down to the ground. The reindeer kissed her, and big shiny tears ran down his cheeks. Then he ran back to the Finnish woman as fast as he could go, for he feared the Snow Queen's icy realm. There stood poor Gerda, barefoot, in the middle of that terrible, icy, cold country. It was so cold that she could hear her own breath. In her despair, little Gerda prayed. When she said When she had said the Lord's Prayer, she was surrounded by angels who drove away the snow and the cold. Gerda went boldly on, straight into the snowstorm, for she knew the Snow Queen's palace must lie where the snow fell most thickly. It was cold and gleaming in the Snow Queen's magnificent palace. The driven snow had made the palace walls. The biting winds had made the doors and windows. The palace halls lay cold and empty in the northern light. Kay was all alone in one of them, playing with hard, shiny pieces of ice. Then Gerda came into the palace, saw Kay, and flung her arms around his neck. "Kay, dear Kay," she cried, holding him tight, "I found you at last." But Kay sat there, cold and still, as if he were frozen. At that, Gerda wept hot tears. They fell on Kay's breast and flowed into his heart. They melted the lump of ice there and dissolved the splinter of glass. Kay looked at Gerda and she began to sing. "In the vale grow roses wild, where we meet the holy child." Then Kay burst into tears and he wept so much that the tiny piece of glass from the mirror floated out of his eye. He recognized Gerda. "Gerda, dear little Gerda, where have you been so long?" he cried. "And where have I been?" And he looked around him. "What a big empty place this is, and it's cold. I'm freezing." Then he clung to Gerda, and they laughed and wept for joy. Gerda kissed Kay's cheeks, and color came back into them. She kissed his eyes, and they were wet like hers. She kissed his hands and his feet, and he felt warm again. They held hands and left the castle, talking about the roses at home. Whenever they passed, the icy winds died down and the sun came out. When they came to a bush with red berries, the reindeer was waiting with a sleigh and some warm clothes the Finnish woman had given them. He took them both to the border of that cold land. Here, the first green shoots were emerging, and here they parted. "Goodbye," called the reindeer. The first little birds were beginning to sing, and the buds of the wood were green. Spring had come. Hand in hand, Gerda and Kay began their journey back. On their way, they met a little robber girl. "A fine sort of fellow you are, wandering around like that," she said to Kay. "I wonder if it was worth going to the ends of the earth just for you. Tell me what happened, Gerda, and how you found Kay." So Gerda and Kay told their story, and the little robber girl smiled and took their hands and promised that if she ever came to their city, she would visit them. Then she rode away into the forest. Next, Gerda came to the castle where the prince and princess had lived, and they were magnificently entertained there. Wherever they went, spring broke out. Finally, in the distance, they heard church bells ringing and saw the tall tower of the city where they lived. They came into the city and then into their home. They climbed the stairs and went in and found everything just as it used to be. But as they walked through the doorway, they realized they were grown up now. There were roses in the open window. Kay and Gerda held hands. They had forgotten the cold magnificence of the Snow Queen's realm as if it were a bad dream. Looking into each other's eyes, they sang an old song. "In the vale grow roses wild, where we meet the holy child." There they stood happily, grown up, yet still children at heart. And it was summer, warm, glorious summer. The end. The Happy Family by Hans Christian Andersen. The biggest green leaf in our country is certainly the burdock leaf. If you hang one in front of you, it is almost large enough for an apron. If you put one on your head, it would be just as useful in rainy weather as an umbrella, for it is so very big. A burdock never grows alone. No, where one grows, there are many more. It is a lovely sight, and all this loveliness is, after all, only food for snails. In olden times, grand folk made a fricassee of large white snails,
which they thought tasted so delicious that they used to exclaim, "What tasty morsel!" These snails lived on burdock leaves, and that is why burdocks came to be planted. Now, at the time of our story, there was an old mansion where there lived people who did not eat snails any longer. The snails had quite died out, but the burdocks had not. They grew all over the walks and the beds in the garden till their growth could no longer be checked. It was a regular forest of burdocks. Here and there stood an apple tree or a pear tree. Otherwise, no one would have thought it was a garden. There were burdocks everywhere, and in among them lived two very old snails, the last survivors of the family. They did not themselves know how old they were, but they could well remember that there had been many more of them, that they belonged to a family from foreign lands, and that the whole forest had been planted for them and theirs. They had never been outside the place, but they knew that there still existed something in the world which was called the mansion, and that up there one of them was boiled and became black and then was placed on a silver dish. But what happened afterwards, they did not know. What it was like to be boiled and placed on a silver dish, they could not very well imagine, but it was said to be very delightful and very grand. Neither the maybug, the toad, nor the earthworm, of whom they had made inquiries, could give any information. None of them had been boiled or placed on silver dishes. The old white snails were the grandest beings of the world. This they knew. The forest had been planted for their sake. The mansion existed so they might be boiled and placed on silver dishes. They lived very lonely and happily. And as they had no children of their own, they had adopted a small common snail, whom they brought up as their own child. But the little one would not grow, for he was only a common snail. But that old people, especially Mother Snail, thought she could see that he grew, and she asked Father Snail, in case he could not see it, if he would just feel the little snail's shell. Which he did, and he found that she was right. One day it rained hard. "Just listen to the pitter-patter of the burdocks," said Father Snail. "And the drops are coming down," said Mother Snail. "They are running down along the stalks. You'll see, we shall have the place wet. I'm glad we have our own house, and the little one has his also. More has certainly been done for us than all of the other creatures. One can see that we are the most important in the world. We have houses for our birth, and the burdocks are planted for our sake. I should like to know how far they extend and what is beyond them." "There is nothing beyond them," said Father Snail. "It could not be better anywhere than it is here, and I have nothing to wish for." "Well, yes," said Mother Snail, "I should like to go to the mansion and be boiled and placed on a silver dish, just like all our ancestors. It is a great honor, you may be sure." "The mansion is very likely in ruins," said Father Snail, "or it may be overgrown by burdocks, so that the people cannot get out. Besides, you need not be so important. You are always in such a hurry, and the little one is beginning to be just the same. Has he not, for the last 3 days, been trying to creep up that stalk? It makes me giddy when I look up at him." "You must not scold us," said Mother Snail. "He is very careful how he creeps. He is sure to be a comfort to us, and we old people have nothing else to live for. But have you been thinking where we shall find a wife for him? Don't you think that far away in the burdock forest, there may be some of our kin?" "I think there is sure to be some black snails," said the old snail. "Black snails without houses, but they are very common lot and very conceited besides. But we could commission ants to do it. They are always running back and forth as if they had something to do. And they are sure to know of a wife for our little one. We know for a most lovely one for him, said the ants. But we are afraid it would be of no use, for she is a queen. That does not matter, said the old ones. Has she a house? She has a palace, said the ants, the most beautiful ant's palace, with 700 passages. Thanks, said Mother Snail. Our son is not going into an anthill. If you know nothing better, we shall commission the white gnats to find him a wife. They fly far and wide in rain and shine, and they know the whole of the burdock forest. We have got a wife for him, said the gnats, and 100 men's paces from here on a gooseberry bush sits a little snail with a house. She is quite lonely and old enough to be married. It is only 100 men's paces from here. Well, let her come to him, said the old ones. He has the whole forest of burdocks. She has only a bush. And so they fetched the little lady snail. It took her 8 days to get there, but that was just as it should be. One could then see she was only of the right sort. And then they had a wedding. 6 glowworms provided all the light they could. Otherwise, it was a very quiet affair. For the old snail couple could not stand any carousing and merrymaking. But Mother Snail made a lovely speech, as Father Snail was too overcome to say anything. And so they gave the young couple the whole burdock forest as an inheritance, and said what they had always maintained, that it was the finest place in the world, and if they lived honestly and respectably and multiplied themselves, they and their children might someday be taken to the mansion and be boiled till they were black and placed on silver dishes. After the speech had been made, the old couple crept into their house and never came out again. They slept the long sleep. The young snail couple now ruled in the forest and had a large prodigy. But they were never boiled and were never placed on silver dish. They, therefore, came to the conclusion that the mansion was in ruins and that all the people in the world were dead. And as nobody contradicted them, it must be true. And the rain fell in heavy drops on the leaves of the burdocks in order to provide drum music for their sake. And the sun shone in order to give the burdock forest color for their sake. And they were very happy, and the whole family was happy, for they really were. The end.
Thanks for listening to Reading the Classics. Have a good evening.